Welcome to Stourhead's audio introduction. We recommend you start listening once you have passed through the lakeside garden entrance. Let us accompany you as you make your way anti-clockwise around the lake, or find a comfortable spot to sit and absorb the story of this fascinating place. There are no specific stops. Explore at your own pace. At the end of each section, you'll hear this music.
Look around. Imagine, if you can, a blank canvas on which creativity and design might grow, might flourish. Now, take in the view. The lake cutting through the valley, the trees stretching to the skies, the arches of the Palladian Bridge steadying the flow of the water. And in the distance, the columns of the Pantheon sit comfortably amongst their natural neighbours. And yet, this picturesque view is not as natural as you might have first thought. In fact, what you are looking at is a meticulously planned and cultivated creation inspired by art and literature. Many years of planning, physical labour, and the singular vision of a man influenced by his European travels helped shape the Stourhead we know today. That man was Henry Hoare the Magnificent. Henry was one of a small group of early 18th century gentleman gardeners, using their acres to create a particularly personal landscape, which expressed their hopes and beliefs about the world and their journey through it, setting an example that would go on to influence landscape garden designers of the future. At its heart, a landscape garden is a cultivated space which amplifies the natural beauty of the land with very deliberate and intentional aesthetic decisions, combining nature and art through both natural and man-made elements. For example, a great deal of consideration to the composition of the scene ensures you are drawn from one element to the next in a way that feels instinctive and inviting. So, look around. Expect to be taken on a journey. See what secrets you can discover and what places will be revealed to you as you explore Stourhead's landscape garden.
Pause here or continue listening to learn more about Stourhead's visionary creator, Henry the Magnificent.
Whether at pleasure or business, let us be in earnest and ever active to be outdone or exceeded by none. That is the way to thrive.
This exuberant fellow was the driving force behind the creation of Stourhead. Henry Hoare the Magnificent inherited the estate from his father in 1741. His family had risen from humble horse traders to affluent goldsmiths to prosperous bankers in just a few generations. Henry was brought up to be a well-educated and cultured gentleman. His words give us great insight into the principles of the landscape garden, an idealized landscape drawing inspiration from classical literature and art, experienced firsthand by Henry on his travels across the European continent. Just as in the tradition of noblemen in classical literature, Henry's personal life was filled with excitement and privilege, as well as shaped by family tragedy. His youthful years included hunting, shooting, and enjoying drinks with friends. But as he moved away from that lifestyle, Henry soon fulfilled his important role as the head of the family. His far-sighted management of the family business perhaps influenced the way he planned and cultivated his vision for Stourhead. Both business and pleasure sought organic growth of assets. With the success that he found in banking, there came considerable wealth. You might be wondering why Henry Hoare was known as the Magnificent. Henry obtained his title due to his grand vision, using his wealth to spend lavishly on developing Stourhead and his collection, making well-informed commissions and purchases. He chose paintings, sculpture, and architecture that was surely influenced by the writers and poets whose works he read, such as Milton, Pope, Virgil, and Ovid. These heroic tales of brave adventurers exploring classical landscapes may have also given Henry a much-needed distraction from his personal life, which at times was fraught with tragedy. By the age of 22, Henry was already a widower, and his first daughter Anne sadly died when she was only 8 years old. Henry would go on to outlive his second wife, Susanna Colt, and their three children, Henry, Susanna, and Anne, which caused him immense grief.
I have been taught by our holy religion, and by former visitations, trials, and afflictions, to submit myself before the throne of God, who still supports me under a grief I never expected or wished to have survived.
While life was at times cruel for Henry, he also experienced periods of happiness filled with adventure and exploration. In the 18th century, it was typical for single wealthy gentlemen to travel in their teens or early 20s. However, Henry was in his early 30s, married and a father, when he set off for a grand tour of Europe, finding inspiration in cities such as Rome and Paris. Henry was captivated by ancient architecture and the antiquities that adorned the streets. He made the most of opportunities to acquire works of art, using his wealth to gather an impressive collection of splendid souvenirs, including paintings, furniture, and even a 2,000-year-old sculpture. When Henry returned home, he was inspired and set out to manifest that inspiration into a vision of his own.
Pause here or continue listening to find out what inspired Henry to create his masterpiece.
No matter where you are in the landscape garden, you find yourself on the threshold of a great living work of art. Everything has been well framed and composed, just as in the paintings Henry collected, perfectly balanced with elements designed to reveal themselves as you move through the space. Henry's classical influence is clear in his artistic decisions, but there is perhaps an air of legacy present in his work as well. By 1744, a year after his second wife died, Henry was ready to begin the work that was to occupy him for much of the rest of his life. So for Henry, it was perhaps most important to be able to share his landscape garden with his children and grandchildren. He dearly cherished them and often wrote to his eldest daughter Susanna to describe the various goings-on in Stourhead's great outdoors. During one particularly scorching summer in 1764, Henry wrote to Susanna and his granddaughter Harriet to tell them of the wonderful cooling properties available in the grotto on such a summer's day.
A souse in that delicious bath and grot, filled with fresh magic, is Asiatic luxury, and too much for mortals, or at least for subjects. Next, I shall ride under the spreading beeches just beyond the obelisk, where we are sure of wind and shade.
Pause here, continue your journey, and resume listening once you reach the Pantheon. There you will learn more about the features within Henry's particularly personal landscape.
What is there in creation? Those are the fruits of industry and application to business, and shows what great things may be done by it. The envy of the indolent, who have no claim to temples, grottos, bridges, rocks, exotic pines, and ice in summer.
Henry the Magnificent's vision for Stourhead's landscape garden may never have been fully realised without the help of his chief advisor and designer, Henry Flitcroft. Flitcroft, initially a joiner by trade, found his way into the world of architectural design by chance after an incident working in London resulted in a broken leg. Determined to stay productive, he spent his time drawing and designing, which ultimately led him to a very successful career as an architect. Flitcroft was vital to the completion of the building programme at Stourhead, but the majority of aesthetic design choices were made by Henry. The most important part of Henry's vision was the lake, the centrepiece of the garden both thematically and physically. This expanse of water, on which dragonflies dance, swallows swoop, and crested grebes swim together in their strange mating ritual, brings life to the picture. The reflection of trees in the water, the movement as wind brushes the surface, the small sounds of waves lapping the banks entice all your senses as you embark on your journey around Stourhead. As you begin to move around the lake, you should begin to see glimpses of the treasures that await. Henry considered his Pantheon, the grand temple nestled on the lakeshore, to be the climax of the journey, and so the winding path should tease and tempt you with views of it before being hidden once more at the next turn. However, despite its importance in Henry's vision, the Pantheon was in fact introduced later on in Stourhead's development. The first garden building, built purposely above a spring, is the Temple of Flora. This little temple near the lakeside entrance is dedicated to the Roman goddess of fertility, flowers, and spring. The classical monument welcomes visitors to the garden, but only those in the right spirit. Carved above the door of the temple are the words Procul o Projul Este Profani, which roughly translates to "Keep away, O keep far away, you who are profane." If the Pantheon is the lofty peak of Henry's classical scheme at Stourhead, then the dark, damp and atmospheric grotto, with its flowering spring, sleeping nymph, craggy rocks and sublime view across the water through a jagged window, is the dramatic descent into the realms of myth and legend. After emerging from the grotto, you can make your way towards the Pantheon. On your way along the path, you will pass a Gothic cottage, which was largely hidden by trees during Henry the Magnificent's time. It is one final moment to pause before rounding the corner to see the Pantheon, a temple dedicated to all the gods, the home to classical deities encapsulated in fine sculpture. It is the centerpiece of Henry's landscape garden. The artworks and literature that influenced his vision found their full expression in Flitcroft's design, inspired by the ancient Pantheon in Rome. However, the Pantheon also has more practical uses. A clue to suggest how the family may have used the space is the grill in the wall behind a statue of Hercules, part of a heating system used when the room was laid out for supper parties and picnics. Across from the Pantheon, atop a hill, is Flitcroft's final contribution to the landscape garden, the Temple of Apollo. This circular temple dedicated to the sun god Apollo is heavily inspired by a painting in Henry's collection that depicted a temple in Lebanon. After a rewarding ascent to the temple, you can enjoy delightful views of the lake below. No matter where you are on your journey around the lake, you can usually get a clear view of the Palladian Bridge. Henry was delighted to be able to tell his daughter Susanna of the bridge once it was installed.
"The stone bridge of five arches you always wished I would build at the passage into the orchard. This bridge is now about. It is simple and plain. I took it from Palladio's bridge at Vicenza, five arches. And when you stand at the Pantheon, the water will be seen through the arches, and it will look as if the river came down through the village, and that this was the village bridge for public use. The view of the bridge, village and church altogether will be a charming picture."
Pause here or continue listening to learn more about Henry the Magnificent's legacy.
After Henry's passing in 1785, Stourhead was inherited by his grandson, Richard Colt Hoare. As a young boy, Richard saw his grandfather's excitement and enthusiasm for projects at Stourhead, describing him as working conspirito, as the spirit moved him. By the time Richard inherited Stourhead, he was an avid plant collector, and thus his stewardship would pay particular attention to flourishes of flora and tactful planting. While Henry's Stourhead was defined by its visionary layout and sense of discovery, Richard's Stourhead would embellish that design with a lavish array of colours, shapes and textures. By strategically blocking sight lines and framing buildings with particularly planted trees and bushes, the trail around the garden became even more of a compelling experience. While Richard had great respect for his grandfather's creation, it's not to say he didn't have some ideas for improvement.
"I had occasion to lament the injudicious adoption of the fir tribe on such ground as we could wish to see permanently wooded. Their prosperity does not extend in this soil to above 60 years, when their ragged tops and tall stature render them a perfect antidote to all rural beauty."
Richard set about interspersing those firs with deciduous trees, beeches, acers, oaks. This now means that as the seasons pass, visitors to the garden are treated to an ever-changing kaleidoscope of colour, from the bare branches of winter to the lush green leaves and romantic colour palettes of summer, to warm, rusty autumnal tones. Not satisfied with just the large-scale planting programme, Richard also turned his critical eye to the many architectural elements of the garden. Richard's intention was to simplify and unify the garden by focusing on two styles, classical and Gothic. In the early 19th century, Gothic Revival architecture was increasingly popular. In 1806, Richard opened up views of the cottage between the Pantheon and Grotto and remodeled it in the Gothic style. Richard wrote of his grandfather's vision in 1822.
He saw with his own eyes and suggested improvements with his own hands. Yet he followed in some degree the fashion of the day and overcrowded his gardens with buildings, and unfortunately of different countries. For the Chinese was mixed with the Grecian and the Roman with the Gothic. Still, however, his good taste was most strongly marked in the general outline of his plans, and he had the satisfaction to live to see his plantations flourish, his domain most generally admired, and a wilderness converted into a paradise.
Just as Henry was inspired by art and antiquity to create his own legacy on a grand scale, his creation went on to inspire visitors in a similar fashion. Richard Coulthoar developed and embellished his grandfather's vision, helping to make Stourhead what it is today. Enjoyed by thousands of visitors each year, Henry the Magnificent's living, evolving legacy endures.
We very much hope you've enjoyed this audio introduction, the first of its kind at Stourhead. Like the garden itself, our vision is that this will continue to grow and offer new knowledge and inspiration as time goes by. We would love to hear your thoughts about what you've heard today, so please speak to a member of the team at the garden entrances. With your input, we may continue to develop the experience to give you an even broader insight into this magnificent living work of art.